Chapter 20. Felicity examines the leaflet by the firelight. "We must get to the Egyptian Hall." "How shall we do it?" Anne asks. She's no longer Nan, but some hint of magic remains, enough to keep a twinkle in her eyes. She's like a princess in a fairy tale who has been cursed to sleep and is finally awakening. "Gemma, will you make everyone at Spence fall asleep, or leave an illusion of us behind so that no one notices our absence? Or will you put the thought so firmly in Nightwing's head that she insists on attending and bringing us along?" "I thought I would simply ask Mademoiselle Lafarge to take us. She loves this sort of exhibition." "Oh," Anne says, clearly disappointed. Felicity unwraps a toffee and plops it onto her tongue. "And do you think this Dr. Van Riffle can tell us about the lady in your visions?" "I hope so. I see her with him. Perhaps he knows something about this Tree of All Souls as well." "Do you hear that?" Anne asks. Horses coming closer. It is 9 o'clock. I can't imagine who would be calling at this hour. "Mrs. Nightwing, it's a carriage," one of the younger girls calls. We push aside the draperies and peek out. The carriage approaches in the distance. The maids rush outside with their lanterns and form a line at the door. We girls beg to be let out as well, and Mrs. Nightwing relents. The night's chilly breath tickles up my neck and finds my ear, whispering secrets only the wind knows. The dust rises on the path. The carriage draws to a stop, and the driver puts the steps to the door. The passenger emerges, a slender woman in a well-appointed blue-grey suit. She raises her head to take in the sight of the school, and I know her at once. Dark, searching eyes under full brows, a small mouth set in a sharp face, and the stealthy grace of a panther. Miss Claire McCleady has returned. She greets our headmistress with a tight smile.
"Good evening, Lillian. I am sorry for the late hour, but the roads were muddy."
"It's no matter, now you're here," Mrs. Nightwing answers.
The servants scurry about, Bridget barking orders and inviting the driver to come round the back to the kitchen for a repast. The younger girls rush toward Miss McCleady to welcome her. I try to conceal myself, but as I'm tall, it's impossible for me to hide for long. Miss McCleady's eyes find mine, and it's enough to make my heart beat more quickly.
"Ladies, I shall allow an additional hour that we might welcome our Miss McCleady properly," Mrs. Nightwing announces to delighted cheers.
The fires in the great hall are stoked to blazing again. Biscuits and tea are brought round. We toast Miss McCleady's return, and the girls regale her with tales of Spence and the coming London season and the costumes they shall wear for the masked ball. Miss McCleady listens to it all without divulging anything about herself or her whereabouts these past 3 months. At 10:30, Mrs. Nightwing announces that it is time for bed. Reluctantly, the girls soldier toward the staircase. I am nearly there when Miss McCleady stops me.
"Miss Doyle, could you remain a moment?"
Felicity and Anne and I exchange furtive glances. "Yes, Miss McCleady." I swallow the lump rising in my throat and watch my friends climb the stairs to safety while I wait behind with the enemy. Miss McCleady and I perch on the velvet settee in the small parlour used to receive guests, listening to the ormolu clock on the mantel tick off the excruciating silence in seconds. Miss McCleady turns her dark eyes to me, and I begin to perspire.
"How nice it is to be at Spence once again," she says.
"Yes, the gardens are lovely," I answer. It is like a game of lawn tennis in which neither of us returns the same ball. Tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock.
"And you are excited to be having your season, I trust."
"Yes, quite." Tick, tock, tick.
"There is that other matter we must discuss, the matter of the realms." Tock. "Miss Doyle, I've begun the task of trying to find the last members of the Order. I do not know how many have survived or what powers remain, but it is my hope that we shall soon return the realms and our sisterhood to their former glory."
Tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock. Miss McCleady presses her lips into a semblance of a smile.
"So you see, I've been trying to help you."
"You've been helping yourself," I correct.
"Is that so?"
She turns that penetrating gaze on me.
"You've had no trouble from the Rakshana, I trust."
"No," I say, surprised.
"And did you not wonder why?" It is because of me, Miss Doyle. I have kept them at bay through my own means, but I cannot keep them from you forever."
"How could you stop the Rakshana?"
"Do you think I would leave that to chance? We have our spies within their ranks, just as they have had theirs within ours, she says pointedly, and my stomach tightens at the memory of Kartik's last terrible mission for the Rakshana. The Brotherhood ordered him to kill me.
I might remind you that your judgment has been hasty before.
What do you want from me? I snap.
Miss Doyle, Gemma, you don't understand yet that I am your friend. I should like to help you, if you would allow it.
She places a gentle hand on my shoulder. I wish that small, motherly gesture held no power over me, but it does. It is funny how you do not miss affection until it is given, but once it is, it can never be enough. You would drown in it if possible.